Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes, fueled by freedom, that unalienable right to be, came to rescue the injured, rescue the innocent, rescue these truths we hold to be. Self-evident.
And down by the Creator, they went down into that crater, in that fiery hell, and sacrificed their lives. Steel and stone, sweat and heartache.
And a very good afternoon to you, Jason Hawes. Happy as always to be here with you on this Saturday, May 21st, 2016. Hope you've had a terrific weekend so far and a fantastic week. And, you know, I was thinking that if by chance your week or your day or your weekend has gone sourly for you and has not gone all that well, as we know, things could always be worse, and a couple little things that happened at work, not even to me, thankfully, but I mentioned last week, I believe, that one of the guys I work with, a driver at our auto parts store, he hit a kid, which of course is never a good thing to do, but he hit a high school student last week while he was in the process of trying to make some of his deliveries, and the kid did sustain some type of a concussion. They had to staple his head, and he sustained a broken leg. But at the time, it seemed like that other than that, rather horrific, but again, could have been worse circumstance, that it was pretty much over and done with. But as it turns out, he has, although he's been trying to fight it, but he's received a ticket, even though he was initially told it wasn't his fault, and he even tried to help the kid. He tried to make him as comfortable as possible and got his jacket out for the kid to lay his head on as he was bleeding from his head. But he received a ticket for it, so you one of the no good deed goes unpunished, I suppose. And then the poor guy goes out and he buys a lemon, although it is kind of buyer beware whenever you have a whenever you purchase from a buy here pay here car lot. But he buys like a 1999 Saab lemon that the speedometer didn't work on it. He buys it with bad brakes that are grinding. Basically, as soon as he starts driving the thing, the exhaust is broken on it, and the car was wanting to die and shut off automatically because it was overheating, or at least the car somehow thought that it was overheating. So that was within 1 or 2 days after purchasing the vehicle, so he didn't have a good week, and then we had a little bird, a little sparrow that got into our store and apparently flew in, as birds often are wont to do, flew straight into the window, knocked itself silly. One of our sales guys, one of our counter guys, is trying to scoop the thing up with a plastic bag. Well, by the time he goes to scoop the little sparrow up with a bag, it has come to and it flies into our break room, goes underneath the refrigerator, clear to the very back where the sparrow, apparently smarter than the human beings here, where it cannot be bothered, where it cannot be poked, where it cannot be forced out, until finally Toby, another counter guy, actually I believe he's training to be a manager, kind of manages to move the refrigerator, coaxes the bird out. The bird flies out of the break room, runs smack dab into the window again. And unfortunately, as then Jim did scoop the bird up in the plastic bag, set it outside. It laid on its side for, I don't know, an hour or so. I thought that second window hit had killed the poor thing. But fortunately not. It had not flown off. But by the time I had left last night, by the time we pretty much had all left, it was standing upright anyway. So hopefully all is well with the sparrow haphazardly flying into the store window. But anyway, like I said, if you've had a bad week or a bad day or a bad weekend, obviously it could always be worse. But anyway, glad to have you, as always. The chat room is open, which I noticed one or two people had at least initially signed into it. And the call-in number, as always, is 347-989-8387. So I wanted to talk today about I got several stories here, that basically the overriding theme being, as I said, the distortion and the outright confusion of our friends on the left. And that is said somewhat tongue-in-cheek. It's also, unfortunately, I believe, a matter of fact as well, though. But look, it's not meant to be arrogant. It's meant to have a little bit of fun with it. And obviously, there's not one single human being that's ever walked in the flesh, no full human being, leaving Jesus Christ, who was both God and human, but no full human being who has ever figured out everything, who knows everything, and has never been wrong. And that includes, even though he would never admit it, Donald Trump. But that being said, I do have several stories here that I wanted to share with you that have that basic theme of basically liberals and the left lying and basically either lying for a purpose or just utterly confused. And, you know, Ronald Reagan, as I said in the write-up, mentioned that it's not so much that liberals are ignorant, they just know so much that isn't so. And again, I think it's up to us to kind of each person to decide for himself or herself. Whenever we come across these things, are they just utterly confused, or is there a more sinister and purposeful notion and nature behind what they're doing and what they're saying? Now, and again, it can vary, and in some of these stories, I believe, that I'll share with you today, it does vary. But one of the things that I want to lead with, or what I will lead with here, which I would imagine, if you try to stay politically informed, you've heard about, you've got this person in the Obama administration, this Ben Rhodes, and there's a story connected with this. I'm not even going to talk too terribly long about Ben Rhodes, although I will come back to him. But you've got Ben Rhodes, who basically did an interview with the New York Times and seemingly bragging that they had successfully put one over on the American people and on the media, and that they had created this, what he referred to as an echo chamber within the media to basically frame the discussion and frame the narrative in a way that the Obama administration wanted it framed regarding this Iran nuclear deal. And, of course, Ben Rhodes was then, at last check, was still being blocked and still not willing to come testify before Congress. The Obama administration, amazingly enough, when separation of powers, when constitutional separation of powers benefits them, then they decide that that's something that they want to refer to and use to try to keep Ben Rhodes from testifying to Congress. But anyway, there's another story that I saw this morning that might be something that's interesting to kind of keep an eye on as well, from the Washington Examiner, where a White House-connected group, basically, I don't think you can call it so much a PAC, but they're a White House-connected group that paid NPR, National Public Radio, $100,000 to help push the Iran deal. This from T. Beckett Adams at the Washington Examiner. And he writes, he or she, I'm assuming a he writes, a group that played a key role in helping the Obama administration secure the Iran deal paid National Public Radio $100,000 in 2015 to cover the nuclear agreement, according to recent filings. And, you know, it's a very even-handed piece, and it really is, from the Washington Examiner. And it's so even-handed that, you know, I can kind of see both sides here. But this is the Plowshares Fund, was this group. It explained online in its annual report that it had awarded a grant to NPR to, quote, encourage national security reporting that emphasizes the themes of U.S. nuclear weapons policy and budgets, Iran's nuclear program, international nuclear security topics, and U.S. policy toward nuclear security. Now, this, though, is, of course, a very being connected to the Obama administration and helping the Obama administration. They are a very liberal, very leftist group, this Plowshares Fund. It's a non-proliferation advocacy group that also boasted on its website that it was instrumental and seeing the Iran deal passed. And the Examiner piece notes that it's not usual for, actually it's not usual. I don't know if they mean it's not usual or it's not unusual from the way it's worded, but they write, it's not usual for outside groups to provide newsrooms with funding. Plowshares donation to NPR raises several questions, according to even the rather liberal Associated Press. Outside groups of all stripes are increasingly giving money to news organizations for special projects or general news coverage, the AP reported, but Plowshares backing is more unusual given its prominent role in the rancorous partisan debate over the Iran deal. And it goes on to say Plowshares was funding other groups, other outlets as well, to the tune of over $700,000. Actually, they funded NPR, NPR's coverage of national security since 2005 to the tune of over $700,000. NPR hosted the group, this Plowshare Foundation, the group's president, Joseph Cirincione, at least twice in 2015 to discuss the Iran deal. In one of these interviews, they noted that Plowshares was a funder, and one of the in the other interview, they did not disclosed that Plowshares was a funder of NPR. The news group's role in covering the nuclear treaty, even as it accepted cash from a White House surrogate, is complicated by the fact that it receives public funding. In other words, of course, if you will, taxpayer, ordinary, run-of-the-mill American citizen money. However, a spokeswoman defended NPR's relationship with Plowshares and said Friday in a statement that there is no conflict of interest. Well, we know that, of course, they would never admit that there's a conflict of interest, whether there is or there is not. She goes on, though, or went on to say, it is common practice for foundations to fund media coverage of underreported stories. And now that's a little bit of a red flag. Was the Iran nuclear deal really an underreported story? It seems like it was in the media, and there was debate on it constantly leading up to and during that entire process. And NPR spokeswoman, again, Jennifer Abrahamson, said and insisted Plowshares money does not influence the editorial content of their coverage in any way, nor would we want it to. Well, we know that, however you want to phrase it, money makes the world go round, or follow the money. We know that these things usually are actually what she's saying is pretty inaccurate, and you might even say an out-and-out lie, but that's for her to deal with. Getting back to Ben Rhodes, who again is President Obama's, of course, Deputy National Security Advisor, and again mentioned here in the Washington Examiner, he bragged that he fed carefully constructed narratives to reporters who were either gullible, lazy, or complicit. All these reporters, this is a quote from Ben Rhodes, all these reporters used to have foreign bureaus. Again, as this in his interview with the New York Times Magazine. Now they don't. They call us the Obama administration. They call us the federal government. They call us Washington, D.C. He says they call us to explain to them what's happening in Moscow and in Cairo. Most of the outlets are reporting on world events from Washington. He then went on to say the average reporter we talk to is 27 years old, and their only reporting experience consists of being around political campaigns. That's a sea change. They literally know nothing. Rhodes also explained they relied heavily on outside groups, including, I think we could say, Plowshares, to create an echo chamber to drown out opposition to the deal. And he even quoted as saying, "We drove them crazy," the Obama spin doctor said, in reference to the opponents of the nuclear agreement. But, you know, I find it very interesting, the smugness even of Ben Rhodes. I saw, I don't have it here in front of me, but I saw that, I don't remember if it was heavy.com or what the exact source was, but they had five things or five fast facts that you should know or need to know about Ben Rhodes. And this is an individual who went to college as a creative writing major. And, you know, there's all sorts of funny majors. There's all sorts of, you know, gender studies and lesbian theater and how to make paper mache transgender people or whatever. But there's all sorts of ridiculous majors and so forth. And, you know, I mean, look, I'm a communication. I have a Bachelor of Arts in Communication. So it's not like I'm exactly when I went to college with my major and my degree was off splitting atoms myself or going off to brain surgery. But this is a guy who basically decided he wanted to go to college and major in how to write fiction, to be a creative writer. And then he gets out of college, and he basically, from what I can tell, his entire real world, real life, you know, real work experience, if you can call it that, was working in various aspects of the federal government. So here you have this creative writer who goes and works in government, who's criticizing reporters, who quite often probably deserve to be criticized, but who is criticizing reporters for basically not being around anything but the government and around politics when he himself has been around nothing but government and politics. But, you know, this is clearly, like I said, you're going to have variations even in these stories. This is clearly, out of Ben Rhodes' own mouth, a deliberate distortion in which they tried to even silence dissent, which, of course, again, the left is very eager to do, and in which, again, out of his mouth, they tried to create an echo chamber, that there was really only one option, that there was really only one valid opinion and only one valid solution and direction to go when it came to this Iran nuclear deal, which, of course, the Obama administration desperately wanted to pass, wanted to sign, wanted to agree to on their terms, even if you can call it that. It's really almost more on Iran's terms than even on their terms. But that's, unfortunately, the administration and the government and the president that we have at this point. But, again, that's just a little bit of information there regarding some of how that narrative was shaped, even a little bit more detail off of Ben Rhodes' interview with the New York Times magazine. Now, the second thing I want to get to here, I think, as I'm trying to decide in what order to kind of go along here, and why don't we take a little bit of time to come down nice and hard on our good buddy Al Gore. This from thestream.org, and it's a piece titled 10 Years On, and we're now 10 years since apparently the showing and the making of Al Gore's blockbuster movie, An Inconvenient Truth. 10 years on, Gore says his film lowballed global warming threat, facts, well, you know, those pesky facts say otherwise. This from Michael Bastich at stream.org. Former President Al Gore told the Hollywood Reporter, his 2006 film, An Inconvenient Truth, actually underestimated, if you can believe that. That's what he's saying anyway, that the film actually underestimated how serious global warming would be, despite, of course, all the patently false predictions he made in the film. But, you know, Al Gore, actually An Inconvenient Truth, the truth does not matter, period, to Al Gore. And he said, I wish the film had overestimated the seriousness of the crisis, but unfortunately, it actually underestimated how serious it is. Gore saying this in an interview Thursday, just days before the 10th anniversary of his film. Again, an interview with The Hollywood Reporter. Now, you know, many people have pointed out, many people have laughed at, many people have mocked, many people have ripped apart several of the predictions and several of the claims in Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth. Al Gore, maybe not in that film, but in many of his other speeches and public appearances and public nuisance encounters, I believe he said that the polar ice caps, either all of the polar ice caps or one of them, either the North or the South Pole, would have no ice by, again, the exact year escapes me, but it's beyond us. He said that it would be ice-free by 2014 or 2015, and of course that wound up to be false. But here he was saying that they had underestimated the seriousness of the crisis. He, of course, goes on to say, but on the positive side, solutions are now being developed so quickly that there is a real cause for hope and optimism. Gore's 2006 film claimed global warming was the greatest challenge facing mankind and that human-produced carbon dioxide emissions were pushing the Earth towards an ecological disaster. The film won Gore and his crew two Oscars in 2007, and the movie revitalized Gore's political relevance. But did Gore's film, Bastage asking, did Gore's film actually underestimate the seriousness of global warming? The Daily Caller News Foundation rewatched, those brave souls, somebody has to do it, I guess, rewatched An Inconvenient Truth in early May to see how well his predictions fared after a decade. Our conclusion, Gore is still alarmingly wrong. The Daily Caller News Foundation pointed out Gore's top five failed predictions, and in parentheses, there were more, we just didn't want to publish a novel. Some of his more famous predictions, including that Mount Kilimanjaro would have no snow by 2016, were hilariously incorrect, and yes, Mount Kilimanjaro still has snow. But that didn't stop Gore from playing up his film's success when interviewed by The Hollywood Reporter. For example, Gore bragged about his expertise on the connection between global warming and extreme weather. All 50 of the state insurance commissioners were meeting in New Orleans and had invited me to make a presentation on the linkage between hurricanes and the climate crisis, he said. It was scheduled for the very day that Hurricane Katrina ended up slamming into New Orleans. And by the way, I'm sure the Hollywood Reporter and all of their due diligence didn't ask him how much money Al Gore made from that deal. But anyway, the article says those insurance commissioners probably regret paying Gore to explain global warming to them, since there's not a lot of evidence global warming has caused the weather to become more extreme. The IPCC, which is who these people, these alarmists, and the left, and the UN, and what have you, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's data, doesn't even support Gore's claim. The IPCC found in 2013 there is limited evidence of changes in extremes associated with other climate variables since the mid-20th century. They also found, quote, no significant observed trends in global tropical cyclone frequency over the past century and no robust trends in annual numbers of tropical storms, hurricanes, and major hurricane counts have been identified over the past 100 years in the North Atlantic Basin. And it says Gore should take these findings seriously since he shared the Nobel Prize in 2007 with the IPCC for raising awareness about global warming. But again, basically saying things continue on naturally as they have basically for all creation and for as long as the Earth has been here. And of course, we do have cycles that, again, are more often than not, if not all the time, more of a natural occurrence, whether it's an El Nino, La Nina, you know, something with a polar vortex, something that occurs naturally that either raises temperature, lowers temperature, leads to more storms, fewer storms, more precipitation, less precipitation, whatever, excuse me, whatever the case may be. But here you have Al Gore hilariously claiming that, well, we underestimated how dire things would be in our movie, An Inconvenient Truth, when it came to global warming. And 10 years after the fact, I think probably fairly safe to say, having never watched the film, but based on what I've read and heard and based on this very article, that almost all of the claims made in that film were likely incorrect, just flat out wrong, flat out lying, or just at least exaggerated, to say the least. But, of course, he's never going to admit that. He's made too much money off of this. And it is the left's agenda. It is the liberals' agenda. It's the progressive agenda. If you want to throw out it, the globalist agenda, to try to push this, to try to scare as many people as possible, to try to convince wealthy countries, wealthier countries like the United States, that we have to pay our fair share in global warming and climate change insurance to the destitute countries, which is nothing more than just a massive, you know, socialist redistribution scheme for something that really isn't even happening when you're talking about global warming. And we've been cooling for over a decade now, almost two decades. And so, of course, they've changed it to climate change, and they still try to scare people however they can and peddle their junk to whoever will believe it. But anyway, that's a little bit of an Al Gore update for you. All right, let's go with the Washington Redskins. Washington Redskins, this is something that we haven't heard about for a little while, or at least I hadn't. And, you know, during my week, during my work week, when I'm often, because I am in the car for most of my job, and usually do have the radio on, I'll listen to various things. I'll listen to music. I'll listen to, you know, talk radio, political talk. I'll listen to sports talk. And I was listening to Fox Sports radio a couple times this week, and that's where I first heard that still, at this point, and, you know, it's interesting that they would even dig up the Washington Redskins again. I guess because people haven't been wringing their hands about that enough lately, they decided they needed to dig it up again. But unfortunately for them, the vast majority of Native Americans polled and surveyed still don't care whatsoever. I didn't notice or didn't necessarily hear who polled them or what survey it was, but still 9 out of 10 Native Americans surveyed absolutely do not care if the Washington Redskins are called the Washington Redskins, which is common sense. I mean, if you are a person who is perturbed, if you are a person who has great gernation over the name of a sports team, of a sports organization, a sports franchise, and if that disturbs you so much in your daily life, then quite frankly, you're not doing so well with your life, that you would let something like that bother you. You know, a team could call themselves the Goofy White Crackers or Goofy White Crackers or Crackers or you know, whatever. They could call themselves the Virginia Confederate Rednecks, which has nothing to do with me since I live in Ohio. And I mean, obviously those names are goofy, but it's it should not bother people in their daily life what a sports team wants to call themselves. But the experts and the so-called experts at ESPN, they just could not let this go. And, of course, ESPN is pretty much, if they had not long ago, they have completely dropped the veil as far as showing once and for all and showing everyone that they are indeed leftist and liberal and progressive to the core. But on ESPN's Thursday broadcast of Around the Horn, a group of ESPN reporters, now these are sports reporters trying to be political experts. So first of all, you know that's probably not going to go well. But these three sports reporters basically were saying that 9 out of 10 Native Americans surveyed in a recent Washington Post poll about the Redskins team name don't know what they're talking about. No, you see, they're just stupid, they're uninformed, they're ignorant, and we, the enlightened expert sports reporters talking politics, will let them know why exactly they're wrong. Now, this from dailycaller.com, the poll from the Washington Post showed that despite the media's narrative, Native Americans overwhelmingly don't care about the issue at all, but Newsbusters pointed out that this didn't seem to make sense to this enlightened panel on ESPN's Around the Horn. You had Israel Gutierrez, and I'd only heard of one of these guys, by the way. But it's interesting even that all of them listed here, as I'm looking at their pictures, even all of them are minorities, because you had Pablo S. Torre, Israel Gutierrez, and J.A. Adonde, who is a African-American. But you had Israel Gutierrez saying, it could just be that others don't know the history of it and therefore aren't offended, because, yes, they these people are too stupid and uninformed. These Native Americans that we're trying to protect, we actually have to insult them as we're protecting them. Israel Gutierrez is saying there's so much history there, maybe even Native Americans don't know the history. Pablo Torre said, our conversation around race is worse when we reduce people to cartoon characters as a policy. That opens the door to other things, but absolutely still stands in this case. And now, wait a minute here. I mean, cartoon characters, it's a mascot. You know, I graduated from Wright State University. We had a if you want to call it a cartoon, we were the Wright State, or the Wright State Raiders. We had, if you want to call it a cartoon Viking, or a caricature of a Viking, and then they decided to go to a caricature of a wolf. I don't know if my university decided they were offending Vikings that are still hiding out there somewhere, and they'll be in trouble if PETA gets a hold of them with a wolf. But anyway, these are mascots. I mean, what's he saying? That what is a sports reporter saying? That teams should not have mascots that are cartoon characters? And then you have J.A. Adonde basically saying the thing that made the least sense of all, noting that it's important to avoid, quote, the tyranny of the majority. He said that's something that the framers of the Constitution instituted into our democracy, republic for many of us, and I think that's something that should apply here, even if the majority is within the particular group that we're talking about. Well, this is a convoluted mess. I'm sorry, Mr. J.A. Adonde, but this is a convoluted mess. It is true that the founders did not want a tyranny of the majority, which, by the way, again, J.A. Adonde, is why they did not set up a democracy, because that's exactly what you can get into with a pure democracy, is a tyranny of a majority. But here you've got, they're talking about these Native Americans who are a minority, but in this case, in this poll, are a majority. In other words, 9 out of 10 of them saying they have absolutely no concern, doesn't bother them one iota that the Washington team is calling themselves the Redskins. And he's saying that this majority is somehow imposing a tyranny on I don't know, the 10% of Native Americans that are offended. I mean, it confuses me, quite honestly, that you have this minority group that all of a sudden becomes this tyranny of the majority, in which it has to be explained to them that, look, you guys are not offended, but we, the non-Native Americans, the good progressives, will explain to you exactly why you should be offended. And, you know, again, the whole thing is ridiculous. Now, this, I don't think there's anything sinister to at least these three individuals. There is something a little more sinister as far as the actual movement itself, and an effort to control the language and control everything else, control us, control the culture, what have you. But these, to me, are just three completely clueless individuals. Good liberals, good progressives, without a doubt, but three completely clueless individuals. And as a reminder, you know, the Washington Redskins team name came into being because many, many years ago, back in the 1920s or whenever it was, the head coach at that time was a Native American himself. And so they called themselves the Redskins to honor their coach at that time. But, you know, that name, of course, is so viciously offensive to the progressives in our culture today. Now, two more stories, if I have time to get to both of them. We have Facebook. And you may know what Facebook has been doing. If you do not, Facebook, of course, has a fairly big story. Facebook, the trending news that you see basically towards to the right, on the right-hand side of your Facebook page, of your computer monitor, of your laptop, of your tablet device, the trending news line, the trending news stories on Facebook, you had former Facebook employees that said that they basically purposefully concealed, censored, buried certain conservative news items that would have been trending by their algorithm, but they made sure that they were not trending. And Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg actually held a meeting with several different, about a dozen or so, conservative figures and conservative people. People basically, everyone basically saying it was not a kumbaya effort, but everything was saying, oh, you know, the meeting went fine. Well, Facebook is still censoring conservatives. This from HeatStreet.com. Louise Mensch saying, we wish this wasn't true, but it looks like Mark Zuckerberg's message hasn't gotten through to Facebook's employees. Conservative activist and Donald Trump supporter Lauren Southern was just kicked off the site for a totally inoffensive post noting its censorship of another conservative. And what's more, Lauren videotaped the whole thing. Basically what this was is she made a note that her friend who ran a page called Disdain for Plebes had been banned on all his accounts, and Facebook had deleted his post calling them out for censoring conservatives. When she made that post herself and said it was utterly insane what Facebook did, Facebook deleted her post that she had made saying it didn't follow community standards. And then they banned her for 30 days. And there was a liberal progressive Weisenheimer on Twitter that was basically calling her a liar until, again, she actually videotaped herself trying to make a post on Facebook and getting the reply that the feature that her posting ability was temporarily blocked, to which, to his credit, this individual known as Roland Scahill did apologize, but she was banned for basically calling out Facebook for censoring and deleting posts from a conservative that she knew. Her post was deleted, and she was banned because Facebook said that she had violated their community standards and guidelines. So anyway, and yes, of course, Facebook is a private company. But you know what? You still ought to treat people, especially since no doubt they are, in their own beliefs, inclusive as all get out. you still have to treat people as equally as possible. And censorship is something that, again, I suppose that they can do if they so choose, but they expose themselves for being something that they claim that they're not in doing that. It was really rather startling and rather ridiculous. And, you know, I've heard the argument, again, that Facebook is a private company. They can do this kind of stuff if they want. But if they, for instance, take money from a group or from an individual with a promise to promote their site, their story, to sell advertising to them, and they go back on that, then that obviously is something a bit more serious. That is something that, at least according to the people at Politistic, a conservative website, that they say has happened to them. And that definitely gets more serious. Now, in the remaining minutes, I want to get to Pope Francis here. You know, Pope Francis is this from Front Page Mag. It's called Pope Francis's Jihad on Christianity, from Raymond Ibrahim, Disturbing Pronouncements on the Faith of the Vicar of Christ. And basically, I've got so little time, I will have this on the American Faith Today Facebook page, but basically you've got the Pope out there trying to bend over backwards, forwards, and sideways for the progressives, to basically cater to them, to basically agree with them. Appeasing Islamic extremists. He gave an interview, and he said, "It is true that the idea of conquest is inherent in the soul of Islam. However, according to Pope Francis, it is also possible to interpret the objective in Matthew's gospel, where Jesus sends his disciples to all nations, in terms of the same idea of conquest." He said that. The Pope said, he basically equated Islamic extremism and Islamic even fundamentalism, when you look at history, to Christianity and the Christian objective of spreading the gospel. Now, Christ himself said that if you're out there teaching the truth and someone slaps you in the face, that you turn the other cheek. That's not in all instances, by the way. That's if you're out teaching truth. He also said that If you go to a city, if you go to a town, if you go to a place and you're not received, shake the dust off your feet and leave with, no skin off your back, no skin off your neck. Now, the author Raymond Ibrahim says, "Only someone who is either very ignorant or hostile to Christianity can make such a claim." And, of course, he goes into the fact that the gospel was always understood and practiced peacefully, going forth and making disciples of all nations. He goes on to point out how Islam has been spread historically by the sword and by conquest. You also had the Pope saying, "When I hear talk of the Christian roots of Europe, I sometimes dread the tone, which can seem triumphalist or even vengeful. It then takes on colonialist overtones." And again, just really, really out there, radical, just almost social justice, social gospel, certainly progressive Christianity stuff, rather than biblical Christianity. And, I will have this on, again, the American Faith Today Facebook page. Where does the Pope fit in this? Hard to say. He could be somebody who's utterly confused. I think, just personal opinion, personal feeling, when looking at the Pope, looking at how things are coming together, I do think there's more to it than that. I think that he is somebody who is a big believer, a big proponent, or a willing participant in this one world system that is basically in place, but will be in power over us for a time. For a relatively short period of time. But he is, in my opinion, just trying to read between the lines and discern. He's aligned with these people. But anyway, there's just so much confusion, so many lies, so many distortions. Some of the people just utterly are decent enough people, probably, who are utterly confused. And some of them are willfully and willingly lying to advance their agenda, for more power, more control, and that's just the way it is. Now, I am pretty much completely out of